based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, and then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
Did you guys ever look at each other and say, I'm out, this is enough, this is just isn't worth it?
I'm not going to let false accusations drive us out of this process. And we're looking for a fair process where I can be heard and defend my integrity, my lifelong record of promoting dignity and equality for women, starting with the women who knew me when I was 14 years old. I'm not going anywhere.
That's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh and his wife Ashley speaking to Fox News' Martha McCollum on Monday. It's rather unprecedented for a Supreme Court nominee to speak to the press, but he wants to get his side of the story out. And on Thursday, there will be, at least there's a scheduled hearing with the Senate where he will testify, and one of his accusers is scheduled to testify. What purpose does that hearing actually serve in terms of the nomination process, which Brett Kavanaugh finds himself in, awaiting the Senate's decision on a seat for the Supreme Court? Joining us to talk about the sexual misconduct allegations surrounding Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh, Molly Hemingway, a regular guest, a Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It is great to be here with you.
So what did you make of, and I believe this is somewhat unprecedented, what did you make of Brett Kavanaugh and his wife granting an interview to Fox News last night and of the interview itself?
The Kavanaugh family is in a very interesting position because there have been all these media reports alleging just horrible wrongdoing on the part of Kavanaugh. It's contrary to the reputation he has, the testimony of quite a few people. The allegations themselves have not been corroborated in any way, even though they've been published in major newspapers and run on cable TV. And so it has been weird to hear those allegations and not hear much of a response. Republicans are being pretty quiet about everything. And so I think what came through in the interview was that this is a man who cares deeply about his name and his reputation and his honor, and he doesn't have much he can do other than speak to it and remind people of how he has lived his life. And the questions that I got from Martha McCallum were incredibly tough, and she went through all of the allegations. And so it was kind of difficult to watch and to think about a family going through this with young children who are witnessing everything. But I thought it was very important to have as part of the conversation, particularly when, if he didn't do it, you wouldn't be hearing much of a defense.
Do you think it changed anybody's minds?
I don't know. I feel like people are making decisions based on politics instead of how we are supposed to do things in this country, which is understand that you can make an allegation, but you also have to prove it, and that the people who have made these allegations have not come anywhere close to proving them. They would not even be heard in a court of law because they are so far away from any standard of rules of evidence that we have. And so what was fascinating to me is that from the time the first allegation came out, Kavanaugh was unequivocal that this was not something he had done. And I heard from a lot of people who said they didn't think he should have been so exacting, that he should have left wiggle room, and maybe there were differences of interpretation about events that had happened. Well, what came out in the interview last night is he said he knew he wasn't involved in sexual assaults in high school because he wasn't sexually involved at all in high school, and even for many years after high school. And so it explained a lot about why he had been so categorical and defiant that when these allegations came out that they had the wrong guy, because people, of course, do know whether they are sexually active in high school or not, and it made a lot more sense why he was being so definitive, I think.
How would you respond to someone who says, well, look, fair is fair and all is fair in love and war, and the Republicans sank Merrick Garland's nomination at the end of Barack Obama's second term, and Brett Kavanaugh has this coming because fair is fair?
I do tend to think that political power is something that you wield and that people have to deal with that people in power are going to wield their power. I think there is a huge difference. You can be upset with the Merrick Garland situation, and you can have a very good case that what the Republicans did was inappropriate. There is such a huge difference that they really shouldn't be compared. The Republicans, at the close of the Obama administration, followed what's called the Biden rule, which is that Supreme Court vacancies aren't filled in the waning days of a presidency. And that is something that had a precedent. It's something that had been followed before by the opposite party, and they chose to invoke it for their declining to hear anything about Garland. In fact, you frequently heard them say, we think Merrick Garland is a fine man and an upstanding justice, but we are not going to have any hearings. We're not going to consider his nomination because of the Biden rule. In this case, Democrats are out of power and they are using a tool at their disposal, which is public defamation, to sabotage a nomination. I think that people should feel very bad about trying to destroy a man and his reputation and his name and his honor and his career, even though it seems like Kavanaugh cares more about his name and how he is viewed by his wife and kids than any seat he currently holds or could hold. The allegations that are being made against Kavanaugh are so extreme and vile that they are a threat to his career. He currently sits on the second highest court in the land. And it's not something that people should do lightly. Allegations are very easy to make. They're difficult to prove, and they should be difficult to prove. But if you don't have even a hope of supporting an allegation, you should think strongly about whether it should be made. And it is really, I think it's a very important moment for the Republic, not whether this person gets seated or not, or whether the left or the right has political power. But as a country, we should all hold, everybody, left and right, should hold the view that the accused have rights and that you cannot destroy a man and everything he has built in his life on the basis of really shady and shoddy allegations.
What purpose does the hearing scheduled for Thursday serve?
So one of the things that is interesting about it is that this isn't really about what public opinion is or whether Kavanaugh is guilty or innocent. It's really about how the Republicans have a very narrow hold on their majority and they cannot afford to lose many senators. And they have a few that are pretty wobbly. Jeff Flake kind of caved right away when the allegation came out and threatened to blow up the process. And a few other Republican senators have as well. And so what Chairman Grassley and Mitch McConnell are doing is trying to hold together an exceedingly small margin and keep it voting in support of Kavanaugh. And so since some of the people felt that a hearing was necessary, and in fact, if you do take this allegation seriously, the only thing the person making the allegation has is her testimony. Every single thing she provided to support it has not gone that way. She had four witnesses. All four say that they don't recall anything that she's talking about, including her dear friend, who is still her dear friend. She has no evidence that she even recalled this moment until a few years ago. She has no evidence that she named Brett Kavanaugh until a few weeks ago. And so the only thing she has is her testimony. And she's the only person of those five people alleged to have been at the party to have not given testimony under oath. She's talked to the media. She's talked to political figures. She's hired high power attorneys. I don't know who's paying for them, but she has not actually given any testimony under oath. And it's the only thing she has to support her version of events. So it is absolutely important that if anyone is to take it even remotely seriously, not only does she have to testify under oath, she has to start giving a story that explains how it is this horrible thing could have happened. But she doesn't remember what year it happened or where it happened. And nobody else remembers anything to support her theory. There are questions she will have to answer if we are going to destroy a man over her say-so.
What about the other allegations that appeared in The New Yorker and then some allegations being made by an attorney who I only recognize because I believe he was Stormy Daniels? attorney in the last couple of months.
So it's a rare instance where, as multiple allegations come out about someone, I think it makes you doubt the accused more. In this case, you have more allegations coming out that are somehow even less reliable than the initial allegation, and the initial allegation already was a little difficult to swallow. So the second allegation is that a woman had no memory of something, but she was at a party 35 years ago. She was exceedingly drunk, and a few days ago she recalled that it was actually Brett Kavanaugh who behaved in a manner you wouldn't want to see your son behave in, exposing himself to her. She called friends even last week and said she thought it might be him, but she couldn't be sure. And after she consulted with lawyers, these Democratic lawyers, then she was pretty sure it was him. It's actually a story about how the New Yorker lost all credibility in the larger Me Too era. There is no way in the world a story like this should have even come close to running, and yet it did. And then the next round was the arrival of Michael Avenatti, who is the attorney for Stormy Daniels. And he has provided no evidence of anything, but he's sending demanding and threatening letters to the Judiciary Committee. I think people can see what's going on here, and that what's going on is not actual allegations against a Supreme Court nominee who has built a life and reputation that kind of speaks for itself. And I should say, I am perfectly willing to believe people who you think are successful and moral are actually monsters. And I wouldn't put this individual in a category where I wouldn't be willing to believe something bad about him. I just think all Americans should demand some semblance of reasonable evidence before they decide to destroy him, that this has not come close to happening. And so the burden of proof is on the accuser, not the accused. And in fact, if he is being wrongly treated, it is a horrible injustice and not something that we should tolerate in this country. And that so many people in the media and in politics and the general public are just throwing aside these values that we claim to uphold is really disturbing, actually.
Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist. We're talking about sexual misconduct allegations surrounding Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. When we come back, calls for Senator Feinstein's censure.
Ask the average evangelical about infant baptism, and they are likely to emphatically tell you that is a man-made doctrine, man-made practice. The Bible nowhere teaches it, and the Bible does not tell us to baptize our infants. Is this true?
Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We'll be opening up the scriptures and looking at who the scriptures say baptism is for. We'll take a look at the doctrine of original sin and how it relates to infant baptism. And we'll also take a look at the benefits of baptism, who's doing the work, and even take a look at a biblical account of baptismal regeneration.
You can meet and hear Chris Roseborough making the case for infant baptism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
It's difficult for others to know how to be a part of another person's grief in a tragic event such as a miscarriage.
Deaconess Catherine Ziegler-Weber, editor of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, Never Forsaken, God's Mercy in the Midst of Miscarriage.
But as Christians, we have a more significant death that unifies us, and that's what we have to cling to, is the cross.
Learn more about Never Forsaken at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about sexual misconduct allegations surrounding Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Molly Hemingway is our guest. We were honored to have Molly and her husband Mark speak at last year's Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference. And we've got another star-studded lineup for this year's Fall Making the Case Conference. Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro. Making the Case is Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Registration is $120. That includes three meals. Thanks to Wittenberg Academy, childcare is free. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 400. You can find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Molly, let's talk about another development here that's kind of a sidelight to the Kavanaugh hearing, and that is there have been several calls for Senator Feinstein to be censured by the Senate. Why would that be called for?
She is the person who actually knew about this initial allegation and hid it and sat on it for 6 weeks. She did not ask the nominee about it during her private meetings with him, or and because of the really bad behavior and unjust behavior toward the nominee, I could see Mitch McConnell, if he has the votes, just holding the vote and not going through with more shenanigans at the committee level.
Some conservative pundits are suggesting that maybe President Trump should withdraw Justice Kavanaugh as his nominee, or I've heard others suggest that Kavanaugh himself should withdraw, and that President Trump should replace him as quick as possible with a woman like Amy Coney Barrett in order to combat the Me Too movement that seems to have woven itself into the process.
Well, Amy Coney Barrett will make a great nominee when Ruth Bader Ginsburg is no longer filling her seat, and I think it's reasonable to assume she will get that nomination upon Ruth Bader Ginsburg's departure from that seat. She has only been a judge for a few months, although she did just recently get through hearings, which would make it easier for her to get through subsequent hearings, except that, again, you have this very narrow Republican majority, and Amy Coney Barrett is someone who even some Republicans who are pro-abortion are worried that she would be pro-life and whatnot. Kavanaugh is a very moderate Republican nominee. He worked for George Bush, so I presume he's a Republican of some type himself. But the idea that it would be easier to get a more conservative justice through is not accurate and does not reflect an understanding of the current Senate makeup. The other thing is that the next Supreme Court session starts on October 1st, which is why Kavanaugh should be seated as quickly as possible so he can be a member of this next term of the court. But more than anything, I think that saying that Kavanaugh should reward people who have attacked him without any evidence, and or that Trump should reward those people, shows a fundamental misunderstanding of the current moment we're in, particularly on the right, where people have grown completely intolerant of the double standards that you see in the media and politics. And what I thought was just fascinating about Kavanaugh coming out, he wrote a letter explaining that he would never withdraw his name and it wasn't going to happen. And it was something that showed that he was letting the left, the people who had tried to bully him into removing his name, that they were had not succeeded. It was also a warning to those few votes on the right, the Republicans who are kind of wavering, that they're not going to get an easy way out of this themselves. They either have to stand up for what's right and rule of law, or they have to cower and cave, as they are threatening to do. And it was a message to all people about how to handle bullies who attack in unfair means. And again, I say, I'm willing to believe anything about this person. I just require evidence before I believe it. And that evidence has not been supplied. So I think it was a good model. And it was just comforting to, you know, in this moment, you've seen Donald Trump, who really has behaved in a manner that he's committed infidelity. He has not been faithful. He has multiple wives. You've seen this type of person stand up to bullies who want to tear him down for those moral failings. It's really nice to see someone who can say, because of the way he lived his life, that's why he can say with confidence that this is a smear, this is just a political hit job. But outside observers should know that these political hit jobs will be made regardless of the personal morality of the person in play. And that, you know, we want to live our lives in such a way that we can look at our spouses and kids and talk about the decisions we made or be honest about our behavior if we have failed to uphold our standards. But this is going to happen regardless of whether people are moral or not.
Two quick final questions. What do you make of how Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski have been responding through the midst of this. They are obviously the two Republican votes that were the biggest question marks.
People say that, but I'm actually not sure that's true. Susan Collins has been pretty consistent that she does not exactly like these games that are being played by Democrats on the committee, that if the accuser, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, does not show up, the idea that she would not vote for Kavanaugh for a witness who doesn't even bother to show up is ludicrous. And she seems to have actually been stronger than some of the wavering folks on the committee like Jeff Flake. As for Lisa Murkowski, she loves to wait to the last minute to make a decision. She might enjoy being someone who throws a wrench in the works. I don't know actually enough about her position, but I do know that people are feeling pretty good about a lot of the Republicans. You know, you could come up with a list of 10 names of people who are not solid on the Kavanaugh vote, but I think that as this continues to play out, there's less incentive to destroy a man over warrantless allegations.
Finally, then, why should women fear some of the leaders of the Me Too movement?
Well, because women are people who love men, and we have husbands and sons and fathers and brothers, and we know that if you can destroy a man with no basis for destroying that man, that you create a very bad society. It's also bad for people who care about sexual abuse. If you really think sexual abuse is bad and needs to be stopped and needs to be dealt with seriously, I think a lot of what's being done by the Me Too movement are some of the worst ways you could handle that. Even this, you don't litigate actual claims of sexual assault on the floor of the U.S. Senate. You handle them through appropriate means that we have established as a people to take claims seriously and get justice. This is no way to get justice if you actually believe that this is a real thing. And if you want to have good relations between the sexes, and if you want to have lower instances of sexual assault and harassment, you want to have good relations between the sexes. And creating this like us versus them mentality is very bad. But this idea that women would be happy to see a man, an innocent man, destroyed, I don't think that shows the knowledge of how women are. We are people who care about the people in our lives, male and female, and we care about than being treated appropriately, and we are not people who think it's fun to see someone have to go through what this man is going through, unless there's good reason. I mean, I think if there were good reason, we'd be happy to see it happening, but it doesn't seem like that has come even close to being seen.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist. You can read her columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and follow her on Twitter at MZ Hemingway. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., with all of the discouragement that has been generated by the priestly abuse scandals in the Roman Catholic Church over the last 30 years, and especially with the recent revelations, we're going to be talking about Protestant questions for scandalized Catholics who still remain Catholic. Dr. Corey Moss of Hillsdale College will be our guest. We'll also talk with Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch about the 30-year anniversary of Salman Rushdie's book, The Satanic Verses. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seifried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.